Life Audio.
You're looking at these books to give to your daughter because she wants to know Jesus. She wants to follow Jesus. She loves Jesus. And they're focused on her body.
Mm-hmm.
Right. What does that tell our girls that God cares about?
Right.
Like, that changes the very nature of faith. And it did it to millennial women especially, far mm-hmm. more even than my own generation.
Mm-hmm. Oh, friend, I hope you have your seatbelt on today. I'm talking to Sheila Gregoire, and she wrote a book called She Deserves Better, looking at the impact of purity culture and related messages on generations of women. And y'all, there's some shock and awe that's going to happen today in our conversation. Sheila's got some data, and whoa, I mean, some of it I'm still digesting even months after this interview, because I'm thinking some of these are books I've read or even books I may have encouraged other people to read. And I just didn't see those things in them before. But oh, the data in Sheila's book, again, She Deserves Better, is really fascinating. And I think really important for us to be aware of, especially if you have daughters, but also, friend, maybe you were raised with these messages too, and maybe they're having an impact on your body image and your marriage in ways that you weren't even aware of. I mean, my hand is raised. That's a situation I would have been in. And oh, I think it's time for us to challenge some of these messages with the truth of Scripture. Yikes, we thought we were being taught messages that were straight from the Bible, but maybe they were twisted just a little bit. And so Sheila, she goes there. So get your seatbelt on, get ready. Oh, we're going to some tough places today, but I am glad you are here for it.
Welcome to Compare to Who, the podcast to help you make peace with your body so you can savor God's rest and feel His love. If you're tired of fighting body image the world's way, Compare to Who is the show for you. You've likely heard lots of talk about loving your body, but my goal is different. Striving to fall in love with stretch marks and cellulite is a little silly to me. Instead, I want to encourage you and remind you with the truth of Scripture that you are seen, you are known, and you are loved no matter what your size or shape. Here, the pressure is off. If you're looking for real talk, biblical encouragement, and regular reminders that God loves you and you're not alone, you've come to the right place. I hope you enjoy today's show, and hey, tell a friend about it.
Sheila, thanks so much for being on the Compare to Who show today.
Great to be here. Thank you.
So your book really caught my attention. I've been following your ministry for a little while, the Love, Honor, and Vacuum. I think I've followed yes. your journey through marriage encouragement. But this book took a little bit of a different turn, which was super helpful, I believe. And the book is called She Deserves Better. And you're talking about these messages that were put on, given to, fed into girls, myself included. I'm right there in that market, around modesty and purity and boy-girl relationships and sex and dating. And it's a lot of fascinating stuff that kind of made me want to cry a little bit. But, if I'm honest. So you contextually know where I'm coming from. So I'm 49. Mm-hmm. So not too old for I kissed dating goodbye, because mm-hmm. I had already kissed and dating, and that book came out, and I was like, well, I guess I'm too far gone for that. But my brother latched on to that concept. But so courtship wasn't like anything that, you know, I had to deliberate on. Never had a purity ring, just a little bit too old for that too.
Yep.
But very much felt like, you know, the message coming out of youth group was the number one asset I had was my virginity, you know, that purity was to be protected at all costs. And my personal story. So I waited until I got married,
mm-hmm.
And I got married at 31 years old.
Ooh, okay.
And so that, I don't know, let's call it 15 years of dating and waiting, I go into marriage thinking that God has like the biggest blessing ever for me, right? Because I did the ultimate, like I accomplished like what youth group told me to accomplish, and really struggled in sex because it wasn't this magical, you know, thing that it was supposed to be after waiting for so long. It was hard. And so anyway, that's my backstory. And I love that you dig into all of this without without blushing. So tell me how you came to write this book, like, you know, the concept of this book, like what were you sensing and feeling in, I'm guessing from your marriage ministry that led to this book?
Yeah. So I had been blogging at To Love, Honor, and Vacuum for quite a few years, you know, talking about how to have good marriages, great sex lives, et cetera. And then everything changed for me in 2019 when it was a Friday afternoon. I had a migraine, didn't want to work, was procrastinating. And I was on Twitter and people were arguing about whether they needed love or respect. And they were referring to Emerson Eggerich's book, Love and Respect. And I thought to myself, I have that book and I have never read it. So this is a great way to procrastinate. And so I went and got it. And I turned to the sex chapter and it was like a nuclear bomb went off in my living room because it was so bad. Like, you know, if your husband is typical, he has a need that you don't have. That need is for physical release, which you don't need. And he'll come under satanic attack if he doesn't get physical release. And I thought, oh my goodness, if this is what we're teaching, what are we doing to marriage? And that put us on a journey where we did a huge study, my team and I, of 20,000 women for our book, The Great Sex Rescue, where we examined, you know, key teachings in evangelical bestsellers related to sex and marriage and saw how they actually have really bad outcomes. And it's not even what the Bible's teaching. Like we've gone really off base and calling for people to get a far more Jesus-centered, healthy way of seeing sex. But the problem was that I was inundated by emails from women saying, okay, I know that what I was taught was toxic and I want it to stop with me. But I have no idea what to say to my kids. Right? Because like, I don't want to say to my 14-year-old, go do whatever you want. But I also don't want them to have all the hangups I do. So that's where She Deserves Better came in. So we did another survey, 7,000 women this time, to see how their experiences as teenagers growing up in church affects them long term, and identifying some of the key messages and some of the key things that we do that really end up harming women, and we need to stop it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as you're talking, I'm remembering even so my career before marriage was I worked for a group that did work around fatherhood and marriage. And I was at a marriage conference, not a Christian conference, a secular marriage conference. But I remember hearing from the stage a message like, your husband is hungry. And if you, you know, you put a lock on the refrigerator, like you can't expect him to not go to a fast food restaurant. And like, I mean, it's been 25 years, but like that just echoes through my head sometimes. Where I'm like, wait a second, that's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Like, he's a grown man. He can be responsible for his own purity. Like, that's not on me. But you're right. These messages are everywhere. So, like, you said it was damaging. Can you kind of fill that out a little bit more? Like, what is actually, what are we seeing as the results of messages like that?
Yeah, so we had a lot of different things we were looking at. We were looking at long-term marital satisfaction, long-term sexual satisfaction if they do get married. Self-esteem, long-term and in high school, and just general satisfaction with life. And there's just a lot of things that we put in the water of youth group that end up hurting all of those things for girls long-term, and also can even make them more likely to marry an abuser, which was the worst outcome that we were measuring, and which we were very, very sad to see how much some of our teachings and some of our practices for teen girls end up making them far more vulnerable to abusive marriages.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Scott. As a servant of God, wife, and mother of four, I understand the juggle of multiple roles and stages. That's why I created the Encourager podcast, to help guide us through the messy middle stage of life. Join me on the Encourager as we challenge the chaos and embrace harmony. Together, we'll create practical systems to balance your roles and fulfill priorities. And we will do it while having joy and energy for both home and work life. Tune in for inspiring stories and interviews, actionable tips, and methods to do both home and work life. Because here, we believe you can do all things, just not all at once.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
So what do we say, Sheila?
Well, let me give you an example of the absolute worst. Okay. So this is the absolute worst. Now, there's lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of messages which had bad outcomes. And I can't mention them all in this podcast. You'll have to go read She Deserves Better. But one of the worst ones was what we call the modesty message.
Okay.
So we measured four different iterations of it. Boys are visual in a way that girls will never understand. A boy can't help but lust if a girl is dressed like she's trying to incite it. A girl has a responsibility not to be a stumbling block by what she wears. And a girl who dresses immodestly is worse than a girl who doesn't. And we let people judge like for themselves what that meant. And if a girl believes that she is at least partially responsible for a boy's sin, she is 68% more likely to marry an abuser.
Wow.
She's 52% more likely, you know, to have really bad self-esteem. Like this is really bad. And she's over 50% more likely to develop sexual pain disorders, which is a huge problem among evangelical women. And it's strongly linked to this modesty message. But, you know, think about what that says. Okay, girls, your body has the ability to cause a man to sin. And part of the way that he might sin is that, you know, he might assault you. Because you could make him out of control. And if that happens, like that, you know, you need to think about what you were wearing. So what you're really telling girls is that your body puts you at danger. And so you're asking girls to basically going to fight and flight mode. You're putting them into a trauma response. And there's a lot of literature that's actually wondering if sexual pain disorders are partly a trauma response. And that's what we're seeing.
Yeah.
You know, and you're also teaching girls, you know, if men lust after you, it's not that they're bad. They're just men. That's what men do.
Yeah.
And so instead of teaching girl, hey, if a guy treats you that way, that's a red flag. Get really, really far away. We're teaching girls, yeah, you really can't expect anyone to treat you like a whole human being.
Yeah. And so
we're teaching them to disregard red flags.
Well, and so the work I do with body image coaching, I mean, I have women tell me regularly, you know, well, like I have to be uber focused on trying to get a better body, to lose the weight or, you know, get the surgery or do whatever, because men are visual and I can't keep him. Like, how can I expect him not to look other places if, you know, I am not, you know, doing what, and I always go back, this isn't really a biblical response. I mean, I hope it's biblical, but I mean, it's not from the Bible. I go back to Hugh Grant when he cheated with the prostitute. I don't know if you remember that, you know, decades ago, he was married to Elizabeth Hurley, who was on the cover of the magazines as the most beautiful woman in the world.
and he's caught in the back of a car with a prostitute who wasn't cute. And so it's like, wait a second here. Like, who is that on? Like, and you know, Frank trying to free women from that perspective, but you're right. Like this message of you're responsible for him, for his sin. Mm-hmm. Your body is responsible. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's.
Yeah. And this whole idea that he's visual, so you need to give him something to look at, right? Mm. It's not even true. Like the more recent meta-analyses, so, which is like the gold standard in research, they take all the different studies that have been done, they do this cool statistical analysis stuff on it, and they put them together into one big study.
Okay.
They took all of the studies that have ever been done on MRI, brain imaging scans, that kind of thing, put them all in one study to be able to draw a really amazing conclusion. And here it is. Okay. Men and women are equally visual.
Wow.
Men are not more visual than women. It's a myth. Okay. Now it does happen that men and women aren't necessarily aroused by the same subjects.
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah.
And women are less likely to realize if their bodies are getting aroused. Mm. So we have more what they call arousal non-concordance. Mm. But physically, yeah, we react to visual stuff too, just as much as men do. There is not anything special about the male brain that makes them more visual. So,
wow. Sheila, you just set someone free with that. You totally just set someone free with that, because I have heard that so many times. That's
But meanwhile, we teach men you're visual. Mm-hmm. And so men feel this, like this innate right to check women out, because that's just how I am. And we teach girls you're not visual. So then if they notice a guy's hot, they don't think of it as a huge deal, because that's just like,
Wow.
I'm not really like that. So
interesting. Yeah. Oh, that's so interesting. Okay. So let's talk about like these messages of purity culture. So I think there's a connection between teaching girls like to, you know, cover their bodies, or their bodies are responsible for, you know, men's response. I think there's a connection there to food and what diet culture is teaching. Is there anything you've observed there? I didn't necessarily see it.
Yeah. Okay. Can I go a bit on a tangent? I'm going to come back to this. I'm going to give some caveats here or context. So I grew up in the 80s. I was in youth group in the 80s. I was in downtown Toronto. So we're Canadian. And my youth group revolved around evangelism, learning how to tell your testimony, praying for the nations, because we had the most multicultural city in the world. So praying that God will let us open up communication to other cultures in our schools. We were really focused on praying through the 1040 window at the time, like the parts of the world that are unreached. And that's what our faith revolved around. Mm-hmm. And so when my girls got to be teenagers in the aughts, you know, and started going to youth group, I assumed it was the same, and I hadn't realized it was different. And so I got my 13-year-old Rebecca, who is one of the co-authors on both Great Sex Rescue and She Deserves Better. I got her a subscription to Brio magazine when she was 13. I never read it. I assumed it was good, right? Mm-hmm. They're Christian, I'm Christian, we're all saying the same thing. That's what I thought. And as we started doing this work, I was actually, we were recording a podcast, and Rebecca told me a story that I had never heard before. I hadn't realized this. But she's 13 and she's reading Brio magazine. And there's an article there by a woman who's written a lot about purity culture and really set the stage for a lot of messages around girls' bodies. And she had a lot of rules for what consisted of what modesty clothing was. And my daughter wanted to be modest. She loved Jesus. She was going to do what these magazines said. But one of the big things was you had to be able to pinch an inch of fabric on your jeans. Okay. Or else it wasn't modest enough. The problem is my family and Rebecca at the time are pear-shaped. Mm-hmm. So we have very narrow waists, but we have thighs. Mm-hmm. And so finding pants that fit is a challenge, because if they're going to fit around the waist, then they're often quite tight on the thighs. Mm-hmm. And so Rebecca's pinching and there's no inch there. Mm-hmm. And so she's thinking there's something wrong. But meanwhile, her friends who were sticks, one of them actually had a hyperthyroid condition. So she was like medically tiny. And she could pinch an inch easily. Mm. And so Rebecca started thinking there's something wrong with my body. Mm. And she did some really crazy things. It didn't last that long, thankfully. Mm. But, you know, where you'd eat only sunflower seeds for a couple of days or whatever. Just trying to get her thighs smaller, because she thought it wasn't just about being modest. Reading these rules made her think there's something fundamentally wrong with me.
Mm. Yeah. Well, so my daughter is about to turn 16, and, you know, 12, 13 age, bought a bunch of the Christian books out there, but read them first. Mm-hmm. And was like, I can't give her this one. I can't give her this one, because there were so many, you know, and maybe had I read your book before this point, you know, maybe that would have given me a filter to process it through, like, oh, that's the problem here. But just knowing that the messages were, you know, your body needs to change, your body's changing, and here's how to kind of manipulate that change, or mm-hmm. here's how to control that change, or here's what you have to be really careful about doing. And I was like, no, I'm not going to make her uber focus on her body, right? Like, we'll talk about periods and normal stuff, but this uber focus on, well, now I've got to worry about what I'm eating. Now I've mm-hmm. got to worry about what I'm wearing. Like, oh, that's so much pressure.
Yeah. And, you know, it starts younger too. There was a curriculum for girls ages 8 to 12 that was put out. There were events all across North America for it. You know, and a lot of the focus was on modesty. Mm-hmm. And the author of these books, the creator of these events, said the reason that she wanted to talk about it early was so that you don't cause shame mm-hmm. once their bodies start changing. So you teach them about modesty when they're young, so it doesn't cause shame to their body. But then what she did was she told girls, like, here's an example of her modesty test. Like, take the raise and praise test. Okay, so put your arms in the air mm-hmm. as if you're worshiping. And if your belly shows, mm-hmm. then you're not being modest, because bellies are very intoxicating. Mm-hmm. And then she goes on to have mothers explain to their daughters what intoxicating means, how it can mm-hmm. make men get out of control, like when they're drunk. And our bodies have the power to intoxicate men, but we're only supposed to intoxicate one man, our future husbands. Mm. She literally told 8-year-old girls that their bodies have the ability to make adult men go out of control. That's horrifying.
Right. Oh my goodness. It just makes me sick to my stomach.
Horrifying. And a quarter or I think it was 500,000 girls went to these events. Mm. Like, think about
the shame that comes with that.
Yes. But, you know, it even goes further than that. You know, Rebecca's reading Brio magazine because she wants to be a strong Christian. She wants to follow Jesus. Mm-hmm. You're looking at these books to give to your daughter because she wants to know Jesus. She wants to follow Jesus. She loves Jesus. And they're focused on her body. Mm-hmm. Right. What does that tell our girls that God cares about?
Right.
Like, that changes the very nature of faith. And it did it to millennial women, especially far more even than my own generation. Mm-hmm. And one of the neat things about our survey is because we were able to compare the different generations.
Okay.
And millennial women, they had more shame. Mm-hmm. They had far worse outcomes on self-esteem. Mm-hmm. They knew far less sex ed mm-hmm. than Gen X women did. Mm-hmm. Even boomer women, mm-hmm. because we stopped teaching anything about our bodies and we just taught, don't do it. Mm-hmm. And so girls were growing up with no real knowledge of mm-hmm. their bodies. When we asked women, we gave them 10 different sex ed terms. And we said, how many of you can identify these words at the point where you graduated high school? Mm-hmm. Gen X women scored way better than millennial women. Mm-hmm. Even boomer women scored better. Like, millennial women did not do well. Mm-hmm. Because we had stopped teaching them anything.
Yeah.
And it leaves them very vulnerable to abusers.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I'm also just thinking, you said about, you know, it puts our body in the focus of what God cares mm-hmm. about. Right. So from the work I do and the messages of diet culture, I mean, I see a lot of women saying, you know, like, it's God putting pressure on me to be thinner.
Yes.
It's, you know, it's gluttony. if I eat Thanksgiving dinner like everyone else. And I mean, and there's some Christian influencers with very big platforms that are talking, you know, the same language, right? Like everyone else in the family can have cake, but you, woman, mother, you probably shouldn't have cake because, you know, then you might grow out of your genes and that would be shameful and gluttonous and disappointing to God. I see that connection too.
Yeah. So at the same time, our bodies are the focus of our faith, and how we can control our bodies is so important because it measures our worth, but also controlling our bodies is important for making sure that men don't sin. Mm-hmm. Our bodies are sin management tools, basically. Right. So we cover them to make men not lust. And then we have lots of sex once we're married to make men not lust. So our bodies are merely sin management tools for men. But we're also, even though our bodies are so important, we're not really going to tell women anything about them.
Right.
So, I think it was like 35% of women, and I'm not the stats person. There's three people who do the stats, or there's three of us on the book, and Joanna Swatsky is our stats person. So sometimes I forget these exactly, but I think it's around 35% of women didn't know the female orgasm existed until after the age of 18. And that was highly correlated with lower orgasm rates once you're married too. Yeah. So we're going to tell women, hey, your body is super important. Your body is the focus of your faith, but we don't actually want you to know anything that might empower you about your body.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I heard recently what there's a new study where they're finding like women have more receptors than men do, you know, and it was like, whoa, like that's never, ever.
The clitoris has more nerve endings than the penis does. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, so what, okay. We live in an era. I mean, I think crop tops are back, or at least they were last summer.
Yes.
Right. I mean, what do you tell your daughter when, I mean, yours are a little older now, but when she comes downstairs and she, you know, is wearing something where you're like, oh, I'm not sure if that's the way we want to be dressing. I mean, I feel like that's a dilemma because I have the, okay, no, like super like 1980s modesty messages that'll ruin her. How do I tell her that she can't wear that? And, you know, her dad's a pastor. She can't sit in the front row of the church wearing that, you know, but then it's like, I'm not going to say all that. So don't you want to wear jeans today? Like, what do you say, Sheila? What do you say?
Well, actually in She Deserves Better, the end of each chapter. So we talk about modesty. We talk about consent, self-esteem, boundaries, all kinds of different things. So at the end of each chapter, we have exercises you can do with your daughter. And we do have stuff to go through to talk about modesty. But here's a couple of just thoughts, broad thoughts. First of all, there is nothing wrong with any particular fashion trend objectively.
Okay.
Fashion trends are cultural. So if you think about it, you know, showing your ankles was a terrible thing to do in the 1860s, right? In some parts of the world, showing your shoulders is awful, but cleavage isn't a big deal. So it really is cultural. And once something has reached the majority, it loses its sting. So when leggings first started coming in, they were a huge deal. But now everybody wears them and they've kind of lost their power. So if you start going on about leggings when everyone's wearing them, it's like, yeah, but once everyone wears them, they're not shocking anymore. And so I think talking to girls about just what is appropriate, right? What is appropriate? You know, what message are you trying to give to people when you see them? Like, are you trying to say, hey, I'm welcoming, I'm kind, you know, or are you trying to shock people? consent matters, right? I did not consent to see anyone's butt crack. Like you're not allowed to show body parts that people would normally need consent to see.
That sounds like a great rule of thumb.
you're violating other people's consent by walking around that way. You know,
that's awesome.
You know, but what is appropriate for where you're going? You know, what is normal? Because you don't want to be shocking. And shocking is different from like individual, you know, some people really love like the purple streak in their hair or they're really flamboyant. Flamboyant is not an issue. It's you can express your own personality through what you dress. It's, are you deliberately shocking people?
Right.
And when we dress on extremes, we shock people.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's really what Paul was talking about in 1 Timothy 2. He wasn't talking about modesty, like don't show cleavage. That right. wasn't an issue. Right. When he was talking about modest dress there, if you read it in context, it's gold jewelry, yeah. expensive hairstyles, expensive wealth. Clothing. It was
yeah.
wealth.
Yeah.
And so what he was going on about is don't exclude people. Don't dress in a way that excludes mm-hmm. people. You want people to feel welcome. Mm-hmm. And so where you're going, are you shocking people so that you exclude them and send them away? Yeah. Or are you dressing in a way that welcomes? And so focus on things like that rather than on, are you causing someone to lust?
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. That's good. I did an episode on that too years ago where it's like, we're probably more immodest by carrying large Louis Vuitton bags and wearing, you know,
yes.
designer yes. head to toe, even if every part is covered, than you yes. are going to church in your bikini, according to right. Timothy. Exactly. Right?
But you know, like if the majority of teenage culture wears dresses that are shorter than moms might be comfortable with, but that is normal. Mm-hmm. And you insist that you wear long denim skirts and oversized t-shirts and that that's what women should be wearing to church, you're actually the one excluding people. Mm. You're actually the one being mm. immodest by Paul's definition mm. because you're making people who wear perfectly normal clothes for our culture feel uncomfortable. Mm. And we don't want that either, right? Mm.
Yeah, interesting. Very interesting. Well, Sheila, tell everyone where they can like connect with you and maybe what is new in your ministry. I know this book came out. Has it been a year already?
March.
Okay. So tell yes. everyone what you're up to.
Yeah. So you can find me at baremarriage.com. So that's my website, my blog. I blog almost every day. Our Bare Marriage podcast is there. We have courses on talking to teens about puberty and sex and for women on orgasm, on libido, et cetera. And we have links to all of our books there too. So just check out baremarriage.com.
And I'll put that link in the show notes. Well, Sheila, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Thank you. It's been great.
Thank you for watching or listening today. I hope something has helped you stop comparing and start living. Bye-bye. Hey, do you need more help with your body image issues? Check out my brand new book, The 40-Day Body Image Workbook. So much good stuff in there to help get you on a new path towards body image freedom. And hey, if you hate to read alone, join us starting May 21st. We're going to read it together. Weekly sessions, May 21st till the end of June. Get it in before summer. I hope to see you there. Learn more at improvebodyimage.com. Hey, this show is proud to be part of the Life Audio Podcast Network. For more great Christian podcasts, I hope you go to lifeaudio.com.
Hey, everybody, I'm Dale.
And I'm Tamara.
We're hosts of the Kynos Project podcast,
where we help you tackle ancient Christian truths in an everyday settings.
To learn more and subscribe, go to lifeaudio.com.